Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble on the Professional Learning for Teachers channel, a new channel fortnightly, Thursdays on Radio Edutalk. And it's a channel that's dedicated to hearing from teachers from around Scotland and further afield who have been engaging in interesting masters or masters level professional learning. And I'm absolutely delighted this evening to welcome to the show Catherine Dodd, who's going to be talking about some research that she conducted exploring teachers' experiences and perceptions of CPD in relation to current policy in Scotland. And just before we hear from Catherine, I would just like to direct you, as ever, to edutalk.cc, the Edutalk website. And if you go in there and click on the link for Professional Learning for Teachers, then you'll be able to see more information on Catherine's work, some of Catherine's master's level writing, and there's hyperlinks there that will let you get a flavour of the work that she's been involved in and the research. And there's also, as ever with the shows on this new channel, there's also another link that gives you an idea about some areas of the new General Teaching Council for Scotland standard for curriculum professional learning, and where tonight's show might link within certain aspects of that standard. Also within the links are a couple of papers that Catherine's recommended. And also, if you're looking to use the show as maybe a bit of CPD for yourself, professional learning, reflection, there's a couple of reflective questions that Catherine's kindly offered to us in advance of tonight's show. So you can go there to find out all of that. And if you have got a comment or a question relating to tonight's show, you can get involved during the live broadcast. If you use Twitter, you can pop something up on Twitter using the hashtag Edutalk. And if you'd prefer to use email, just email something to edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. So apologies for the long-winded introduction, Catherine. Welcome to the show, and I hope you're well. And it would be great just to hear from you, if you could just give us a kind of introduction, a flavour of your career in education, and a little bit about maybe how you got involved in educational research.
Hi, David. Good evening. I have been teaching for about 23 years, and I did a PGDE at Murray House, and have been teaching in Edinburgh ever since at four different schools. And currently, I've been seconded from my Colston school, and I'm working at Murray House as a teaching fellow. So it was my involvement, I suppose, at Edinburgh University that got me interested in professional development in the first place and in teacher learning. And at the very beginning of, or quite near the beginning of the Chartered Teacher scheme, I started working on modules, and that was a revelation to me, I think, in the types of learning that I was being expected to engage in. And I'd always, throughout my career, I'd always been really interested in CPD, and I'd gone on lots of courses, and, you know, before Macron, when it became mandatory to do so, I had always, been looking out for courses and doing professional reading. But I think the study at university made me realise that I had positioned myself in a particular way as a learner. And I think the way I positioned myself was as somebody that was there as a sort of conduit, that I was there to receive information, strategies, techniques from experts, and that I was going to transmit them in the classroom. And so when I was talking about learning, I don't think I was really thinking about learning. I was thinking about just delivering something. I was going to be delivered to, and I was in turn going to deliver. And the module, studying on that, and I was also doing a postgraduate certificate in 3 to 14 physical education at Edinburgh University as well. And the types of learning that I was doing there, where you were having to read papers, engage critically with them, and engage in professional dialogue with colleagues on the course, and I suppose start to question your own assumptions and beliefs about children and about learning and about parents and about the curriculum, was encouraging me, I was going to say forcing me, but encouraging me to engage in a different way than I had before. And that made me, once, you know, when I went back to other sort of traditional CPD courses, I became dissatisfied with them and the lack of rigor that was being expected from you that started to frustrate me. So one of the opportunities in the MTeach was to look at an area of practice within your own school, and that was what I was doing for my module. And I thought, well, that's what I'm interested in. And I was aware that, as well as my own experiences, coincidentally, I suppose, the CPD landscape in Scotland is starting to change with Curriculum for Excellence, and the different model of CPD, I think, is being expected of teachers. And I felt that I understood a little bit about that, and I wasn't sure if I hadn't undertaken these master's modules, whether I would have had that understanding. So I wanted to find out what teachers at my school thought about this, who I suppose were mainly doing the more traditional CPD events. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got interested in, you know, what do teachers think? Are they understanding? Are they prepared for? Do they want to even be involved in this new kind of CPD landscape?
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about this new CPD landscape, Catherine, can you, just before you maybe go on to talk, you've kind of explained a bit there about the kind of rationale for your research project, but before you kind of get into the actual research question and your methods, can you just outline a little bit to listeners about where we may be at, or where we're meant to be at in terms of this new CPD landscape? And I suppose that links into recent reports and recent pieces of work from national organisations and maybe in particular the so-called Donaldson report.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that certainly, you know, when Curriculum for Excellence has the literature around Curriculum for Excellence and the rhetoric, I suppose, that's coming from HMIE and the Donaldson report and various sort of policy around CPD is much more about teachers being co-creators of the curriculum, which I think, because I was sort of teaching when 514 was at the beginning of 514 or near the beginning of 514, and that model seemed to be a very different model where you were expected to sort of centrally produce packages which teachers then delivered in the classroom. And this, the implementation of Curriculum for Excellence seems to be sort of predicated on a different type of model, I think, that's more school-based and more collaborative and more reflective. And when I was looking at the literature around this, these are things that kept coming up that contributed to effective CPD, that sort of collaboration, reflection, and school-based, so based on your context, so not going out on a course that maybe you or maybe a couple of people in the staff went on and came back and maybe tried those things out for a few days or a few weeks maybe, but they kind of petered out quite often because there was nothing much behind it really, and no school-based need. And there is this tension between what do I need as an individual and what is my school working on, mm-hmm. which I'm not quite sure how we resolve. But I think there's a definite understanding that it's got to be different. And you know, things like the theory and practice divide, which Johnson talks about in the report, that schools are seen as a place where real life happens and universities are where theory happens, and the two don't really meet particularly, and that's going to be changing.
So can you just start to kind of take us through then about how you went about conducting this piece of professional inquiry?
Well, anything from my interest came from, so this is what I'm thinking about CPD. I want to know what other people think, because if we don't have a shared understanding of what CPD is all about or how the CPD landscape is changing, it's very unlikely that that much sort of authentic change is going to happen. So that was the sort of rationale behind it. And I mean, I look back on the research now and think, there are lots of things that I could criticise about it, but So I started, so that's what I wanted to know, and I decided to have a questionnaire with the staff. So I did an online questionnaire, which people could do in their own time, at their leisure. It was anonymous, and I just had some questions about CPD. And even in, I mean, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but, you know, things like this for me, I just thought, oh, you give people a questionnaire. And I didn't really think too much about what questions. I thought about the questions. I didn't really think about the form of the questions. So, for example, one of the first question was, what kind of CPD activities have you taken part in, or something like that. And I gave the list of what they were. And then, of course, when you've got a list, people will tend to tick quite a lot of them. Whereas I think if I'd asked the question in a different way, in a more open way, and said what kind of activities, then perhaps I would have got a truer reflection. So there's certainly things that... So I started out with that questionnaire, and that gave me a sort of general overview. And lots of interesting things came out of that I hadn't really expected. Because, for example, most people said that they'd taken part in a wide range of CPD activities, of which going to a sort of traditional in-service course was only one. But when they started to talk in the third question about CPD, it seemed that that's what everyone was talking about, that sort of traditional course where there's a speaker or an expert or something to learn. And they weren't talking about the reading or the professional dialogue or the peer learning or the other things that they said they did. So that was a really interesting tension for me, and that was something that I wanted to explore a bit further. So I did the questionnaire, and very kindly, most of the staff, I think 16 out of the 22 staff, replied. So I had quite a good return rate. And then I decided to do a focus group interview, so to talk more in more depth and to follow up some of the issues that had come up from the questionnaire. And so I just sent out an open invitation. In the end, I think four teachers came along and one Friday afternoon and spoke to me about their experience with CPD. And I chose to do a group interview because I like the way that in the master's level modules that I've been doing, a lot of it is around discussion, what do we think, sharing and co-constructing our understanding, I suppose. Mm. And so I wanted to do it like that. I didn't want me to be the person that's, you know, I'm an expert and I'm interviewing you about something. And I hope that would give a chance for people to have a more open discussion. There were faults again within that because I hadn't done it before. So I just thought, well, I'll just ask them a few questions and then we can discuss. And I hadn't thought about I think I'd thought about recording, but I thought, oh, it might be a bit intrusive. I won't do that. Mm-hmm. I'll just take notes.
Yeah.
But the discussion went on for, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours. And I couldn't take notes for all of that amount of time. So I felt I ended up losing. I had notes that I was just frantically jotting down keywords and phrases. So if I was doing that again, I think I would, you know, be up front and say, I want to record this, and I would do the transcription, and I would have had a better record. So the things I learned about the process.
And with that in mind, Catherine, then, you know, if you are, I'm sure you do talk to other teachers who are presently involved in research studies, so I was really impressed with your kind of commentary and your research and the kind of depth of critical reflection on your own approaches. So, just to kind of boil it down, then, what kind of pieces of advice would you give, you know, teachers that are maybe new to action or other research? And just following on from that, I was again interested with your methods and your kind of analysis of your data. How did you go about identifying useful responses from the focus group that you conducted?
Well, I'll sort of deal with the second part first. As part of the project, we had to do a literature review. So I was reading a lot about what makes effective CPD, what works in CPD, why doesn't CPD work. And there were themes that came out of that. So consistently, I mean, a lot, you know, there were lots of things, and I couldn't take everything, but there were certain characteristics that came out of that I then looked for. So when I was looking at the questionnaire, I was, you know, is there anything about collaboration? Is there anything about reflection? Is there anything about... So I had sort of selected the themes. But as I say, there are other things that came out of it which were really interesting. So, for example, I got really interested in the vocabulary that was being used about when people were talking about CPD. So they were using words like delivered and lecture and audience and instruction and training. And I hadn't thought, and you know, it was only as I was sort of going through the data that I was thinking, actually, that's really interesting because it tells me something about how the teachers were viewing themselves as learners in the way that I had always viewed myself as learning, as a kind of recipient of somebody telling me something. And so that hadn't been something that I was going to look at, but that became quite obvious when I was looking at the data. So I think it was being open to things. So I had my themes that I was looking for, but being open to other things that came out of it. And then again, when I was looking at doing the focus group interview and looking at comments, I was, you know, I was trying to code it. So I was going through it with a highlighter saying, well, this seems to be to do with building on your prior knowledge, mm-hmm. or this seems to be do something to do with collegiality or whatever it was. So I did have themes that I had identified, but I was trying to be open to what else was coming up in the conversation.
Yeah.
And interestingly, in terms of talking about giving advice to other teachers, one of the things that I do at the moment is supervising fourth-year BEds in their final project, which is a research, an action research project, which they do in their final placement in school. So I have some students who I'm supervising, and it's really interesting because that's helping me, you know, talking to them about what they want to do and what they want to find out and how they're going to go about getting the data and what's a manageable thing to research in a school setting. Mm-hmm. So it's been really interesting because, you know, and made me think, because I'm on my final project at the moment, and just talking about how you do research and the things that you have to take into account. So, for example, I think one of the main pieces of advice I would give is, you know, do something that's authentic and meaningful to you, that really, that you care about, so that you'll be able to sustain it. Because it's hard, you know, working full-time and researching and reading about it. So if you're not interested in it, you're probably going to give up. Mm-hmm. And something that's, you know, whatever, something that's happening in your classroom that maybe you're not terribly happy with, or something that's happening in your school that you think, I wonder why that's happening, that doesn't seem to be quite right. So whether it's, I don't know, dissatisfaction with the way that your reading groups are going, or, you know, does the people council really have a voice? You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. So trying to make it something that actually is something that's happening at your school. You're not doing kind of layering on top of what's already going on. There's something that is already going on that you can investigate.
And you touched on the importance of the literature review for you in terms of bringing out kind of themes from what's work that's already been done. So, I certainly thought that the way that you wrote was, you know, right through your paper made it clear that the in terms of policy, and maybe even in terms of your own kind of initial thoughts around CPD as you embarked on the research, it was very much making it clear that this kind of transmission of so-called expertise and the kind of so-called passive model of CPD is utterly insufficient in this day and age. And was that backed by the text that you referred to in your literature review?
It was, yes. And the title that I had for my poster, which I loved, because as soon as I read the quote, I just thought, I feel like I'm that person. And it was from Guskey, and it says, how can it be that something universally recognised as so important can also be regarded as so ineffective? And it's something that, you know, huge amounts of time is invested in can also actually result in very little at the end of it. So that traditional model, as we've been saying, doesn't actually work. I'm not saying there aren't occasions where it can work, and there sometimes are models of CPD or professional learning where it's appropriate to have a one-off something where you've got to learn about something. So, for example, learning about how to use a program in ICT might be something. Or, being updated with child protection guidelines or something like that. So there are, I'm not saying that every single professional development opportunity has to be to do with transformational learning, but if there's no no learning that might actually lead you to question your beliefs or your assumptions, what's it all about? Why are we doing it? And I think I do feel very optimistic about the future for professional development, because I certainly think that the policymakers have got an understanding of what it might be. How that translates into the reality of the classroom, I'm not so sure, when people have sometimes only been used to the more transmissive approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And was it through your reading that this phrase, the teacher as technician, emerged? I mean, that's a phrase that I recall from my own reading over recent years. And can you maybe just expand on what writers have meant by that, and how that relates to maybe this perception of unsatisfactory forms of CPD up till now?
I suppose what I understand it to be is positioning the teacher as not as a learner, but as I suppose I said at the beginning, as a sort of conduit for policy, mm-hmm. and that CPD is seen as a sort of package of techniques or strategies or something that you have to sort of go on a course, receive this package, sort of remember it, and then go and apply it in your own classroom, as if it's kind of a one size fits all mm-hmm. solution. So it doesn't matter what context you're teaching in, or what your school is like, or what your class is like, or where you are as a learner. You know, it's that sort of assumption that if you just go and do this, things will be fine. Mm-hmm. And they're often not. And then there's frustration, is because if you receive this one-size-fits-all and you try and go and put it into practice in your own classroom, it doesn't work. And you get frustrated and you don't do it. And you're not really quite understanding why you're not. And it's as if this set of skills or strategies is just easily translatable. And it's not always. And I think that, I mean, it's interesting working with students at the moment, because that, I think sometimes people want to be told what to do. You know, sometimes it's comfortable to be told what to do. If you do it this way, you know, you'll have success, you'll have results, this will work. And there are things that you can help students with, but you can't tell them how to do it. And I think sometimes people want to be told and are frustrated when they're not being told, and don't understand that it's more complex than that. And it's, you know, if you position yourself as a technician, you're never going to move on in your learning journey. You're going to come out of university or your induction year and sort of be the same, mm-hmm. you know, with a few added skills on top, probably, but you're not going to change.
And just moving on to a bit more about your findings then, Catherine. I mean, I'm really looking forward to hearing how you kind of explain, you know what you found, and a little bit about your conclusions. I mean, I was particularly interested in one of the kind of visuals on one of your papers, which I think it was one of your conclusions that the CPD should build in previous knowledge and skills, and you picked out some quotes, I think, from the focus groups. About you know, it should be about what you already know, and let's go from there. There's problems when the CPD doesn't match your needs at that time. Somebody else, I think, said you don't get an empty child at the beginning. It's the same for staff, and all of this seemed to. The thing that jumped out for me was I'm just wondering maybe in the process of the participants, engaging in the focus groups, or maybe even reading your work afterwards, I wonder if anybody kind of thought, well, you know, if it's as painful for us, I just wonder how it is for the children, if they're kind of being taught in the same way that we're exposed to CPD. But that's one that just jumped out for me, but it'd be great to hear just now about the actual findings from your research.
Well, I think that's really interesting, because there's sort of, I suppose, attention. What I wanted to do was to find out that these characteristics that I've mentioned have been identified as contributing towards effective CPD. So I had identified those, and I wanted to see if teachers if those were the same things that teachers were coming up with. And by and large, actually, they were. So, you know, the one that you mentioned, so building on previous knowledge and skills, which is very significant in literature, and that was echoed with what teachers said. And they said that, you know, the frustration with going in a course, so whether you're a professional or whether you've been teaching for 25 or 39 years, it's just assumed that you're all the same. And people were saying, we wouldn't do that to children in our class. You know, we're told, and we're expected to find out where the learners are. And there very often seems to be very little effort in the traditional CPD course. And it's very difficult. You know, I don't know how, as a, you know, somebody that's providing the CPD, I don't know how you do find out where everyone is. But I think it needs to be acknowledged that everyone might be at a different place. And don't just try and brush it under the carpet and say, well, let's all start from here, which actually, it doesn't work. And for some people, it's way beyond where they are. And for some people, it's not where they are either. So, and it's the same with groups of students, actually. You know, even though they're sort of at the same place nominally on their learning journey, people's thinking goes at different rates. So some people are ready and some people aren't. And some people want a certain type of learning and some people don't. And I think it's, you know, so people did want, you know, were aware that they wanted the kind of CPD that characteristics that were being mentioned in literature. However, at the same time, they were also referring to CPD as something that in which they were the recipients. And, you know, I think there's that sort of dichotomy between the two things.
Mm-hmm. And what conclusions did you reach then?
I suppose that what it told me was that we need to have some sort of shared understanding of what professional learning is and what we might want of it. And within that, once we establish that sort of understanding, within that, what are the characteristics that we might want? So collaboration, for example, comes out of something that's extremely key in lots of literature and also in policy at the moment. But it's not as simple as that. You can't just say collaborate to everyone. You know, the management team at the school can't say, right, I want everyone to start collaborating. Because, you know, what is collaboration? And, you know, another thing that came out in literature was the dangers of, so I think it's Ford that calls it cozy consensus. So that sort of, you know, we all agree together.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're collaborating and we're supportive of each other. So you can work in an atmosphere which is emotionally supportive, but in which learning isn't really happening.
Yes.
Because you have to be able and prepared to ask challenging and difficult questions, and it's not always comfortable. And another thing I think I feel slightly frustrated about in the policy is this sort of teacher learning is a journey that you will just go through step by step. And it hasn't been like that for me, because learning that affects your sense of identity as a teacher or the beliefs that you thought you had or the assumptions that you've always made isn't actually always comfortable or easy to deal with. And I don't know how we do, I suppose, you know, foster that sense of collaboration and make it an ethos where it is all right to say, I don't agree with you, or we challenge each other, or we ask each other difficult questions. It's not easy, I don't think.
Yeah. It's interesting. A few other things that I think came out for me from reading your work, you spoke earlier about this perceived long-standing dichotomy or issue between educational theory and educational practice, and we're talking more about school-based CPD or professional learning, as it's often termed now, and we're talking about the need to transform individual teachers, or maybe go back maybe to the language of charter teacher to an extent, a kind of reinvigoration of the workforce or mid-career teachers,
mm-hmm.
and about whole
mm-hmm.
staff groups. And do you have any point, as a lot of people are asking now, about you know, big educational events or particularly where policy's talked about or maybe so-called wicked issues, you know, just tell us what some of the next steps might be, or tell us about somewhere in the world where actually people have got to grips with this and made effective change. Did anything come out from either your research or your reading about how this kind of new CPD environment is or might be made to work at school level?
Well, I suppose that sort of establishing this shared understanding, mm-hmm. getting rid of, as a staff and as a school, this notion that we all had to sign up ourselves to lots of courses and that would be our first for our very CPD done, would be something that was key. And, you know, one of the things that I read about quite extensively, and I think Michael Freeman talks about it a lot, is learning communities and how you might establish a learning community within the school that, and again, I don't think it's necessarily easy, but having a sense of, and my school, although I'm seconded at the moment, is certainly trying to do that. So one of the things is a study group. So choosing something that interested, I mean, it's a volunteer thing, but interested members of staff have something, a paper to read or a chapter to read and come together and discuss it, might, you know, that's a small step towards it. Mm-hmm. And having, you know, and I know that a lot of what is in the Johnson report about it becoming a master's level profession is quite controversial, and I know that, you know, several of my friends and colleagues certainly don't want to be embarking on that journey. But I still think that there needs to be this place for theory so that we, not just that we do it, but we understand why we're doing it. And it doesn't mean that, I can understand that going to be inviting, you know, a sort of master's level dissertation isn't for everyone. But, you know, we do need to engage with theory at some level and sort of use it to reinvigorate our practice. And, you know, one of the things that we sometimes talk about on the EdTeachers, you know, one of the saddest days will be when you have to give up your library card because, you know, then you won't have access to, you know, or you've got a number that you can go in and do the online search. But, you know, some way of finding, because otherwise, as a teacher, I think it's getting easier now with the internet because there are more journals to which you can get free access. But otherwise, how do you get access to journals and educational books, you know, that cost £27 or whatever? Is that what people are going to, I don't know. So mm-hmm. for people like the GCS or, I don't know, whether Edinburgh University or wherever, make their things free access so that there is, you know, for the people that want to do it, there is the opportunity to engage with theory.
Yeah. Now we're just coming into the last couple of minutes of tonight's show, and if you've got a question or a comment on what you've heard or some advice on some of the matters that we're talking about, if you can just quickly pop an email to us at edutalker@hotmail.co.uk or put something up on Twitter and include the hashtag edutalk. Just interested in what kind of response you received, if any, of course, because, you know, people are very busy and often aren't aware that research has been conducted in the school. But what kind of response have you had then, if any, from colleagues and from the wider educational communities?
I think it's really interesting because although people knew and people on the staff were extremely supportive of me, you know, they did the questionnaire and people talked to me and people say, you know, how's it going? But actually, nobody asked to see it when it was finished. And subsequently, I was seconded anyway. So by the time it was actually finished and I completely written it up, I wasn't a member of staff anymore. And it is interesting because I don't know. And sometimes, you know, I've talked to people who are doing the MTeach with me, and sometimes when you're examining something at school, there is that uncomfortable thing about how you share it. And because sometimes people might not feel comfortable with what you've, or your interpretation of what you found.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked to people, certainly talked to people, but nobody's asked to read the, you know, the 4,000 words anyway, yeah. So...
Well, I certainly found it very, very enjoyable, and as I said at the top of the show, if you go to Professional Learning for Teachers page at agitalk.cc, there's a link to a couple of sections of your work, and indeed the poster that you produced, and again there's a link to the poster on the site. Was that something that you, this is just out of interest, was this part of the assessment then, or was this something that you had to produce for a conference, or something that you chose to do off your own back?
Well, it was part of the assessment, and the original thing was that we had an evening at the university where those of us that were engaged on the project produced posters about where we were so far. So the poster that's on the website is kind of what I finally had, but this was during the process of while we were engaged in the research. And so we had the opportunity to, these posters were made, you know, blown up and put up for the evening. And each of us who wanted to could sort of do a sort of mini presentation with interested people. So there were people from the university, there were people from different stages on the MTeach programme, there were colleagues from school that came along, and, you know, anyone that wanted to. It was just small discussion groups sort of, you know, round the table, sort of discussing where we are, you know, what was going on. And it was really interesting because people from the university came who are research or who have done much more research, and it was really helpful for them to say, have you thought about, are you going to, and gave you pointers with the research. So it was a way of sharing where you were up to at that time, and it was also, we were asked then as part of it to submit it with the literature review and the commentary.
And just finally, you mentioned, I think it's come through often in the last 40 minutes or so, that you are optimistic about the future. So can you just see why you have this optimism, and, you know, is there anything that you're working on at the moment that people should take an interest in or maybe look out for?
Well, at the moment, since you ask, and I'll do another talk about that later if you want.
That'll be great.
So I'm on my final project at the moment, and because I'm really interested in teacher learning, and I've got the opportunity at the moment to be working with students, so getting a different perspective on teacher learning. And at the moment, at Edinburgh University, on the PGDE, some of the students are going to be placed in as a pair in a classroom. And so on their middle years placement, two of them will be working in one classroom. And that's my final project, is going to be looking at what kinds of teacher learning might be facilitated by that model, which is a different model to the normal sort of mentor-teacher, student-teacher. So there'll be two students and a mentor teacher. And I'm just wondering, what I'd like to find out is whether engaging in that sort of model of learning might help, you know, it's a way of fostering a professional relationship, fostering collaboration, possibly fostering, because often I think students think that when you go out to school, they don't, you know, that's when theory finishes and when you go into the classroom. But the fact that they're both, you know, there'll be two students engaged on academic study might, I don't know whether it will, and that's what I want to find out, might give them more opportunity to think about the theories while they're in the classroom. So I think that initial teacher education certainly is looking at ways in which our understanding of professional learning can be changed. So that's optimistic, I think. And the fact that, for example, the fourth years all do a professional learning project, which is, you know, sectioning action research in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So that they are going out in schools already having embarked on that journey, I suppose. Yeah. So that makes me feel optimistic too.
Yeah. Catherine, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on the show tonight. It's been fascinating, and hopefully we'll catch up with you at some point in the future and hear how things have gone with that study. So thank you for giving up time this evening, and best wishes for the future.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the opportunity to talk about something that I am quite passionate about. So thank you for giving me the opportunity.